roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home here in Mountain's Edge, Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the Devious and Dastardly Goz, our ace co-host. What's up, Goz?
What up, homeboy?
Not much. Ready to talk about the fights that took place last night, give a little tease to what's happening later in the week, because the UFC keeps coming strong. That's what I was telling somebody earlier today.
Earlier.
Ever since they got back from Yas Island, I don't think we've had a break, man. We're going to talk about a card that just took place. It was called UFC on ESPN plus 33. The next one's UFC on ESPN plus 34. Of course, there's a little bit of news nuggets to tackle as well. So, should be fun. This is really our first episode of the week, but it's Sunday night. So, UKers, Oceanic people, you can thank us later. You're welcome. All right, folks, buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio again on a late Sunday night, August 30th.
Damas y caballeros, hablemos MMA con Danny Segura.
Hola, amigos. Danny Segura here. Just wanted to drop in and tell you about a new show coming to MMA Junkie. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish-language podcast dedicated to all things professional fighting. On this show, we'll be covering the biggest news and topics of MMA, plus highlighting the most relevant stories happening in the growing Latin American scene. Hablemos MMA will also feature interviews with some of the best fighters, coaches, personalities, and experts in the game. You can find us every Monday on your favorite podcasting platform, starting July 27th. Talk to you then.
Last night, folks, here in Las Vegas, Alexander Rakic defeated Anthony Smith in the main event of UFC on ESPN plus 33. Pretty unanimous, 30-26 and two 30-27s. Man, those kicks started it off. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm going to call it like it is. I like Anthony Smith, but he had nothing for Alexander Rakic. And the reason I paused is because Smith took the loss hard. He's a former colleague of ours, really, if you think about it. When we were with SiriusXM for 5 years, he actually had a show, MMA Tonight. So, you know, you tend to have a little bit of extra care for, I guess, more of those people that are around you or closer to you. Not best friends in any way, but still, I was a fan of his. He was on our channel. Again, look, he needs 3 to 6 months before he can right the ship. In basketball, you can, as a fan, as a media, you can go, boy, the Lakers stunk today, huh? And then they can maybe win tomorrow, and then it's all forgotten. MMA, it's tougher. That's why sometimes describing it that way sounds harsh. But Alexander Rakic looked great, Goz.
I thought he looked great because he was first with his attack. Almost like Neil Magny and Robbie Lawler, who we'll get to later. I thought he was successful because he was the one that set the tone in the fight. And I felt like Rakic did that, especially with that leg kick right to the calf early on. You could just tell the first one he took, Anthony Smith, it was like there's a certain reaction that a fighter has when they have it. Oh, that first one, you go, that's a sweet spot. I got to keep doing that. And he was smart enough to keep doing it. And it's almost like you're behind the eight ball at that point. Like your whole game plan gets thrown out the window and it. I just felt like the whole fight, Anthony was trying to figure out what he could do, but maybe didn't have the resources to do him anymore.
Yeah, those leg kicks definitely, for one, they just knocked him off his feet. Two, Anthony Smith said, hey, man, that guy's got powerful legs, powerful kicks. And then he went on to say other things, shortcomings maybe about his frame that we'll get into in just a sec. But goes, I thought I was going to see a little bit of the Anthony Smith that we saw in the Glover Teixeira fight. Look, this fight was only 3 rounds, not 5. And I was impressed with Anthony Smith's striking in the Glover Teixeira fight. And for some reason, I thought I was just going to see more of it. But again, Alexander Rakic took control throughout those leg kicks early on. And then after that, I think he just had a nice, formidable skill set superior to Anthony's.
You know, I like that he not only gets, it was, in a way, it's like he's fighting two fights. Because he's fighting Anthony Smith, but he's also, in a way, trying to prove to the UFC that once Reyes and Blachowicz get their dance card done, he has to show everybody that he has something for the winner of that fight. And so I thought he was fighting two fights at the same time, and I thought he did a good job of doing that. Because you look at the way he fought, and you go, shit, well, he could probably do that to one of those two guys, too. If the other guys aren't as aggressive enough, then he could probably do that. And it sets the tone. It makes you want to watch that next fight. So I thought it was a great performance. He didn't get the finish, but, you know, who knows? If it was a 5-round fight, I think it probably would have came.
I agree with that. He even said he could fight for a title. I would slightly disagree with that because it's not that. He just lost to Volkan Ozdemir as well. And then he bounced back and beat Anthony Smith. And Anthony Smith actually beat Volkan Ozdemir. So I see a round robin just right then, right there between those three. You're supposed to say that. You're supposed to convince yourself that you're at that level. It's a little bit of the confidence game. And look, you just took out a guy who did fight. To be fair, he did fight a guy who fought for the title within the last couple of years. So I guess you are entitled to say it. Hey, look, that guy just fought for a title. What's wrong with me saying it? But I still would like to see somebody coming off more than one in a row fighting for a world title, which I think he gets that part. So in the meantime, just keep improving Alexander Rakic. I do like his scoop punch that he has. It looks like a little bit like an uppercut. I do like his leg kicks. And then he also, remember Anthony also kind of had some back takes a little bit, standing back takes, and he was able to remain calm and get out of those situations. Anthony Smith has a very underrated ground game, and he doesn't use it that much, but when he does, he's effective with it. And I had to be reminded of this by old Dan Tom. Old Dan Tom used to always tell me, don't sleep on Anthony Smith's ground game. He's a legit black belt. He's used it before. Shout out to Dan, former MMA Junkie Radio co-host and still a colleague of ours, doing some great stuff. I catch his Protect Your Neck podcast quite often.
I like the intro.
Yes,
I like the music too.
What does he say? He says,
I picture him like the lady in the Warriors in a room where it's just all red. You just see his face. I like it.
He goes, what does he say? What's up, savages? Or something like that. This is where what I like is that token line. We break down high level MMA. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like that. And then I like the close with, he's got some little song going. Although he didn't do it last week, but he's got some song going. And he always hits the bank. Hits the post, and always protect your neck. And he gives us a lot of love, so I do not mind one bit giving him love. These are franchises that are, if they're not owned by Junkie, it doesn't matter. If it's done by a Junkie, like the same way we've done this with John Morgan in the past and his MMA Roadshow with John Morgan, and of course an actual new property that we have, Ablemos MMA, if we're telling you, hey, go head that way and subscribe or listen. I'm telling you, man, we're sending you towards quality content.
Yeah, a lot of us have our, you know, Patreon shows, YouTube channels. There's a lot of stuff going on that we like to support each other in, and it's pretty cool. I was thinking about Dan, and one thing I want to see him get back into is maybe that spinning back click rotation. I haven't had him on there for a while, so that'd be nice.
He did a couple with us, right? Yeah.
I think he did one.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also reached a 5-year anniversary as well. So congratulations to him and all his hard work. And so anyway, getting back to Anthony Smith, like he's actually said on his podcast as well, he's got a soft spot for Anthony in that regard. And so he knows just a lot about Anthony. He said something funny the other day too. You know how we run into Francimar Barroso at the gym, mm-hmm. Extreme Couture. I mean, he said it, but he just says, I don't enjoy breaking down that fella as much as I do an Anthony Smith or whatever. I'll just mm-hmm. point you to Protect Your Neck podcast. Check out Dan Tom. He's got a funny sense of humor. All right. So Anthony took his back a couple times. He wasn't able to get on him and secure his hooks. And you could tell that even if he got the second hook, Anthony Smith was already, I think, could tell, I'm going to fall off the front anyway, which he did. Either Rakic can shake him off or just off their bodies starting to. I mean, I think it was in the first round. I think, you start to get a little sweaty anyway. But Rakic was just a big guy, goes. I mean, a really big guy.
I'm glad you
And I'm noticing this a lot. Like, Bill Algeo looked like he could just post up Ricardo Lamas all day if they were playing basketball. Mm-hmm. There's that long, lanky frame is just the right frame for MMA 95% of the time. Khabib Nurmagomedov would obviously disagree. He's a stocky guy a little bit. Pitbull Frady over at Bellator, he would disagree. There's just some tanks, obviously, that have success. DC's another one, you know. It's not across the board, but a lot of those guys, man, that have those strong frames, if the cardio holds up, if they also have the power to match, I'm telling you, they're a handful. And so I think Anthony Smith, you know, he just started to fall off. That would have been a big guy to get that second hook in on anyway, because like I said, man, Rakic just a really thick fella. And Anthony stands 6'4". If you see him in person, you're like, wow, this is a big fucking dude. But he just doesn't have a filled out frame of muscle, you know. And so he's not going to walk around at 240 or 235 or anything like that. I believe he cuts 10 pounds or less or something like that is what I've heard. And I think he noticed it and he felt it. Early in the fight, throughout the fight, I think it became a little bit mental. And then towards the end, he was open enough to share and say, hey, look, I got to figure out if I got to go back to 185, which means a complete different lifestyle change to what I'm doing now. Meaning, you get a cheat day once a month, maybe, instead of once a week. You really just have to, like, be on top of it at all times. Or I got to bulk up and become 230 guy or 235 guy and just really, really add some bulk to me, some strength, and then hopefully match these guys. Because he's not 6'1", he's 6'4", you know. And maybe at that point he can, I think he feels like going forward, maybe he can compete. Now that said, again, he fought for the title once, and it's not like he didn't get there, he didn't find his way there. However, the road there was 3 wins in a row that I recall. I think it was Rashad, Shogun, and then the quality one was Volkan Ozdemir. He beat Volkan at Volkan's one of his peaks, because I don't think he's done in any way. But he caught Rashad on the tail end. He caught Shogun on the tail end. Both guys that just aren't the massive 205ers that we see now.
But see, I'm glad you brought up his frame, because when I was looking at Rakic, all I could think of was there's just no more room for fat or muscle. Like, he is as perfect as you can get frame wise and he just seemed like a bully out there. He really did. And I think Anthony Smith, if you always look at the guy at the top, right, the champion Israel Adesanya, I think Anthony Smith has the type of power to push him back a little bit, you know, and has the range to hit him. I think he has the smarts. He's got the ground game at 185. Yes. I think that's at least, I think he needs to go down and give it one more try, because this felt like 2 fights where he was just a little out-muscled in these fights, these last 2. So I wouldn't mind him giving it one more chance, especially if it's something he's thinking about. Just do it now rather than later, because it's going to be way tougher later.
Yeah. Well, You know, against Teixeira, he had a formidable showing early on. That fight definitely could have ended. Glover took a lot of damage early on. Came back and won. That's four in a row for Glover.
Four.
He's in a great spot right now versus Thiago Santos coming up. And with the vacant title also being disputed like a couple weeks later, that division's just going to have a whole new scenario, I guess, with John Jones no longer being at the top, a new champion, and then the reshuffling of all these contenders, most of which could raise their hand if somebody were to shout, has anyone ever lost to John Jones? You know, and Santos has, Glover has, Anthony Smith has, Dominic, I mean, they've all lost to John Jones. He's out of the way. That changes everything. So, like, I'll give you an example. Santos has beaten Blachowicz. If Blachowicz wins, if Blachowicz is one of those guys that says, man, I'm one of those guys that likes to avenge losses. I mean, he's got like eight or something, so it's not like there's only two that are nipping at him, gnawing at him. But if he were to, you know, to maybe that's a card Santos could play. So, again, that whole reshuffling. Glover, if I'm not mistaken, lost to Phil Davis and beat Bader. So all these guys have just they've had their way with each other. I think Gustafsson's beaten Glover. So Gustafsson would then take a look and go, oh, wow, everything's different now. The guy I lost to twice is no longer there. And then he rejuvenates itself. So 205 is really, really fun with a lot of the scenarios and possibilities that are out there. And we get to see it all within the month. So I'm very, very happy about that, and I really hope Anthony Smith picks up the pieces. And if he goes to 185, the sooner the better. And if not, hey, start pumping some weight and don't get too discouraged. Again, you performed well at times during Glover with Rakic. It could just be a matchup thing. You know, like I said, he beat Volkan. Volkan beat Rakic. Rakic beat Anthony Smith. It could just be, you know, the more of a matchup.
I think this is the most competitive 205 has been, if you take like the last 3 years. But I've always wondered what I feel like the Chuck, Tito, Randy, and then on the other side, you got your Shoguns and your Vanderlays. I felt like that was the most exciting time in 205 history. Vitor Belfort. I felt like there was a lot of excitement in those type. And maybe it's because you didn't see a fight every weekend. You know, you actually had to
build up. Well, you got to know the guys very well. Yeah. There was a big build up.
But that was an exciting time for that division. And I don't know that the excitement we get now matches that excitement, but it's definitely like the quality of it all. It's more competitive now.
Yeah.
But that was a fun little rotation that they had back then.
Yeah. Rampage, Forrest, Rampage, yeah. Rashad, Shogun, Noguera, little Noguera. Arona, if he had made it over, would have been a nice contributor.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Keith Jardine?
But just remember the excitement Chuck. When Vanderlei finally came over and you got to see Vanderlei and Chuck and then the rematch of Chuck and Rampage. Like, it was just a lot.
See, here's where, okay, you know how in boxing they say fighters are protected?
Mm-hmm.
I think Pride definitely did a good job of putting their fighters in positions to be able to go, that guy hasn't lost in 20 fights. Vanderlei had some draws, but he went, I think, from 2000 to 2004 or something like that, 2005, without losing. Now, granted, on the way, he fucked Sakuraba up like three times and a few others. And so, you know, but he also
but
won
he,
some
But
big
he
fights.
Messed them up.
Yeah.
It's not like he slipped past people. Yes. He was destroying people.
Yeah. So that if you win a lot in a row, people then are taken by, you know, smitten by your success. Like Ferguson, Tony Ferguson. I mean, how many times do you need to hear, this guy hasn't lost. He's 13 in a row, hasn't lost since 2012, 14-1 overall in the lightweight division since he's been in the, I mean, that is an impressive statistic. And you hear it over and over, especially when other fighters give praise, you know, Pettis, the guys that had lost to him before. Only Michael Johnson had beaten him, and all those guys are like, man, that dude's tough. I fought him, but he's tough. And RDA, you see those lists of fighters that have lost, that carries a lot of weight. And I think that used to happen with Vanderlei and Fedor and many others, and
even
that's
Hendo,
why they were big deals. Yeah they were big deals. Now it is tough to win three in a row. You get to 4 and 5 and still you're not getting a shot at the title. And then you better talk some smack. And you know, what if you win five in a row, but you don't even speak English? I mean, you know, like Islam Makhachev, I don't know his record off memorized. I think it's 18-1. I mean, that guy, we should all be going, damn, that dude's legit, you know, because he has won some fights. But we just don't hear about him too often. And so, but this is a guy that's clipping some of those other guys that are exciting and speak a little bit of English and that we know more here stateside. But there's a lot of fighters overseas that are just getting the job done. Kudos to them. But it's become more of a worldwide sport. And so next thing you know, they're, you know, they're on our lap and we're like, what? This guy's won six in a row? Holy shit. Okay. Why didn't I hear this?
Yeah.
All right. Rakic moves on, obviously, in these unofficial tournaments. That's basically every weight class. I don't know who he's going to fight next, but he beats Anthony Smith. Neil Magny defeated Robbie Lawler. Why did Robbie Lawler go for that takedown in round one? He looked really good when he came out. He looked aggressive. He had a bounce in his step. You could tell Magny had concern because he knew this guy can strike. He's a tough southpaw. He's been in there with a lot of fighters. I got to watch myself. When do I shoot? I don't want to walk into an uppercut or a flying knee. Of course, that's more of the Robbie of old. But still, I think he was like sizing him up. And then all of a sudden, Robbie just goes in for this takedown. And then got caught with his legs in between Magny's legs. And then they came to the ground. And now he's grabbing for a single. And now he's all of a sudden fighting off some of the grappling, some of the wrestling that Magny's starting to, you know, he's starting to control him, keep him down. And now he's fighting to get back to his feet. And I'm like, yeah, you could have stayed at your feet if he just would have been where you were. And that's not to say Magny wouldn't have taken him down. But I thought that was a huge mistake right there. Huge mistake in the fight.
I think fighters sometimes don't realize one weapon that they have. And it almost never really goes away. It's just that intimidation that certain fighters have. Robbie Lawler's one of them. The one where no matter what kind of streak you're on, or what kind of streak he's on, at some point you look across the cage and you go, man, it's fucking Robbie Lawler.
Exactly. That's the look Magny had early on.
Yeah. But Robbie gave that away, right? Because the second he basically did Neil Magny a favor in engaging in that sort of game, which kind of gave Neil Magny some confidence that he just gave to him. He didn't really have to earn it. And I thought that was just a big mistake. And it's like kind of like Dan Henderson, even towards the end of his career, no matter who it is, or Anderson Silva, you know, you look at Dan Henderson and you go, man, he's older. But he's still got that H-bomb. I don't want to get knocked out by that guy. Like I was here at the beginning of the pay-per-view. I saw the screen. I saw all the knockouts this dude has. I don't want to be one of them. There's still that little check that you have to do within yourself. And I think Neil Magny had it until Robbie just kind of gave it all back to him. And it's nothing to take away from Neil Magny because he had a great performance and he did everything right. And he looks so good, man. He looks like if he can just keep putting these types of fights together, because people will look at that and go, yeah, Robbie's getting older or whatever. You go, okay, yeah, you're right. But at the same time, Neil Magny really fought a good fight tactically. Everything he did, I thought, was pretty spot on. That's a dangerous dude.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in Lawler's one of, you know, when Lawler fought Askren, he had some very explosive moments. He really could have jacked Ben mm-hmm. Askren up before he got caught, you know, in that bulldog choke. So, yeah, he is getting older, but he still has shown some Robbie Lawler-esque type of athleticism. I mean, that was over a year ago, but still, in this fight, I think he drained his battery a lot after that round. I think mentally, he knew he was down 10-9, and I think he also probably, his body told him, you're not able to perform like you once were, and now you're at a disadvantage because your energy meter is down, you know, and this other guy has grown in confidence. All this is stuff that the human mind is computing psychologically and mentally, and he came out, he was a little bit more hesitant, but by then I think Magny started to know, not only can I strike with him, now I know what he feels like on the ground. Because there was a moment when Lawler did get on top of him and started throwing some bombs, but I saw more of a confident Neil Magny because he knew that he was coming out with a higher energy meter energy bar than Robbie Lawler after that. And it was just going to sustain itself while Robbie was just going to continue to tire and be less effective.
If you look at these cards week after week, one of the common themes, and it didn't happen to everyone because we'll probably get to it eventually, Ricardo Lamas, but that old guard is just going away little by little. And it's not so much that now we have this new guard. I think guys are just so strong and fast and powerful. These little reigns, they don't last that long. They really don't. Like, you're at the top, and that's why it's so amazing that a guy like Jon Jones is able to do what he's done. Even Daniel Cormier has been able to do what he's done. But these little reigns don't last that long.
I know. Seeing Jim Miller lose a few weekends ago. Mm-hmm. Granted, Vince Bichelle's probably about his age. He just hasn't had as many fights as Jim Miller. But you're right. Cormier, Matt Brown, Nogueira, and Shogun in the same fight. A lot of fighters are.
We're asking ourselves about Woodley.
That point. Woodley, we've been questioning. Yeah. Lamas won, but a lot of people had him arguably down 2-0. He wound up winning a decision. But finishing out with Neil Magny, one last thing that I really liked that he did was every once in a while when Robbie Lawler did get a little bit of a shot of adrenaline where you felt like, okay, here he comes. You know, he's starting to stalk him. He's going to unload. Neil Magny was throwing this, like, real subtle jab. It was effective.
That was a good one.
And I liked it. And he would basically trip up, I think, Robbie's mind. And then he basically had to organize, again, his footwork exactly where he wanted Magny. Because when you're a little older, I think you rely more on that than your just wild athleticism. You try and be more cerebral. You learn more things, but you're trying to compute more things. Rashad Evans actually once told us that. And sometimes you just can't compute so many things, and that's when you have when you're stagnant. You're actually wind up not throwing anything. But again, Neil Magny won. Credit to him. He's saying, all right, just give me Jeff Neal, which was supposed to be the original matchup anyway. And I think Jeff Neal's like, yeah, I'm down. So that sounds good because it's a move up for him. For Jeff Neal, at least in the USA Today sports rankings, Neal's ranked ahead of Magny, so Neal doesn't even have to do this, but since they were going to do it anyway, I think he's like, yeah, sure, I'm down. So we might already have ourselves a matchup there. Alexa Grasso, who moved up to flyweight, defeated Ji Young Kim. Unanimous decision, 30-27 across the board. Look, I love Paul Felder, and I think it's just his job to say, you're going to have a number next to your name on Monday, but when I tried to look at the rankings for USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie, I didn't see it. I don't think we can fit her. We do top 15 and then another three called honorable mention. So in actuality, what I'm trying to say is Alexa Grasso can't even break into the top 18. Now, Felder only has to worry about, well, not really Felder, but the UFC is only ranking UFC athletes. We're ranking Bellator and Invicta and a few others, but this is only her debut fight. She dominated with the score. I don't think it was like you didn't see, you know, Ji Young Kim, like she wasn't obliterated. She was just defeated 10-9 every round.
Mm-hmm.
But I still see a young lady who doesn't look as big as some of the other 25ers, and I don't know how long that run's going to be. But hey, look, as long as you're winning, good for you. But I still feel like this is a strawweight that I'm looking at.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I thought she looked good. I thought mentally she looked stronger than she has in other fights. The one thing she has going for her, she just has beautiful boxing and footwork and her ability to get in and out. But
that power seems to be gone at 25.
A little bit.
She doesn't look as strong physically.
But, you know, also, too, I don't know that she throws punches that way. She's more of like the Sugar Ray type, you know, where she'll throw them from different angles, and she's pretty pinpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that she's really going for that knockout punch. She's got to catch you with hooks,
yeah, instead of power. But she won, so, you know, that's good. And then, like Ghost said, Ricardo Lamas, he was the opening fight on the main card. He defeated newcomer Bill Algeo, who didn't make it easy for Lamas. A lot of people had Lamas losing the first two rounds. That's why a lot of people thought Lamas needed to win round three to win the fight, finish him to win the fight. But when he started going down the road of a 10-8, we thought, he might rescue a draw, you know, and that's not the end of the world, I guess. But then the announcement came, and once they said 29-27, you could tell by that score alone, the 10-8 did go to Lamas, And one of the other rounds must have gone to Lamas.
I thought it was one in three. I thought he won.
Yeah. To be fair, it was close enough that you could rank it that way. And maybe I got caught up with the announcers or something. But there you have it. That's the main card. Four decisions. All dominant performances by the winners. I think that's why maybe the pacing, you know, was a long night. We had some really quality names on the card, but it was lacking oomph, I guess. Those moments, those highlight moments. And then even going into the main card, we had two decisions where Impa Kasanganai defeated Maki Patolo. That was 30-27 across the board. And then Zach Cummings defeated Alicia Shakiro. Not a split decision, but a unanimous decision. Two judges did give Shikiryo a round. I think a lot of us felt like it could be 1-1 going into round three. And but, boy, the pace of that fight was slow, man. They didn't throw very much at all. So it was a little painful to watch at times, honestly.
The day, it wasn't one of those days that went by very smoothly.
Cummings said, look, I haven't fought in a year. I'll figure it out. Okay. But still, man, that fight was just, oh, man, when is this one going to end? Let's get the Maki Patolo. Sometimes that's just what goes through my mind. Now, the funny thing goes is before those six decisions, we had four submissions. We had no KOs.
It was Morris like in the beginning.
UFC 176 or 76 with Liddell and Keith Jardine. It was called Knockout. It was in Anaheim, California, and it produced no knockouts. That's when Forrest Griffin defeated Shogun Hua. And then the same night, Keith Jardine defeated Chuck Liddell. Alex Caceres submitted Austin Springer. Sean Brady submitted Christian Aguilera. Pollyanna Viana submitted Emily Whitmire. And Mallory Martin defeated Hannah Cyphers. $50,000 went to Mallory Martin and Sean Brady because they got performances of the night. And then the fight of the night went to Ricardo Lamas and Bill Algeo. Ricardo Lamas also informed us that that may have been his last performance. However, he wants to talk it through with his family. But he did give some shout-outs if we're, in fact, to never see him again. And he even had a little political statement there on behalf of his father, who, according to Lamas, the father and the uncle were persecuted in Cuba. And they almost had their lives taken. I mean, I don't know the full story. He said it in Spanish, and I'm pretty sure I caught most of it, but they almost died fighting for their independence and freedom, and they're now in the United States, and he feels like this regime under what was then Fidel Castro, and I believe now is his son, is it needs to come to an end and become a democracy, I guess, like we have here in the United States versus the dictatorship that has been there for at least, I don't know, 50, 100 years. I'm not sharp on Cuban history, but at least since the 50s, so I would put it at 70, something like that.
We got to reconnect with them because that was pretty interesting. I'd like to hear more about it.
Yeah, it was. So on paper, this fight card was way more sexier than last weekend's, but I still kind of walked away with like, all right, I won some money, so that made it good. But these decisions just killed it. They're in the 25-foot octagon. I mean, and there's killers. Rakic, Smith, they fuck people up. Lawler, he fucks people up. You know what I mean? Like, Patolo, Kasanganai, there's a lot of fighters in here that, I mean, the first four you can't argue. They just went the submission route. But we just got no knockouts. I don't know, man. I mean, they're wearing Florence gloves. And
it was just strange. It was just versus Rakic paced was
pretty
weird.
Violent at times. But yeah, it was a really bizarre event.
You know what I hate is on ESPN Plus. Not that I love the commercials because it's the same ones over and over. But man, what really eats my tits is when it just goes blank and it says we have a commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sit like, what are you going to do? You just
on ESPN sit there, Plus?
Yeah, you just sit there like a dummy staring at a blank screen.
Well, I drink a lot of water, so I often use those breaks when I see it like 5, 4, 3, and then the ref's about to jump in, I get a head start to the restroom.
I've been doing the simulcast, which I love, which apparently, I guess, maybe they don't have. I don't know if I need to see if I can download a newer version of the app here on Roku, but on my Xbox, I can split the screen in up to like 6 different things.
Mm.
So I'll have like the fights and then like a baseball game and a basketball game and a soccer game. And so when they do go to commercials, all I do is just click the other one and make that one big.
Shout out to Northern Lights for that Roku. Also, speaking of junkies, I want to give a big shout out to two of them. One, remember Lewis Tough?
Yeah.
Lewis Tough from the UK. I believe he's in London. He's an Aston Villa fan. Really nice guy. Chatted with him briefly this weekend. The purpose, though, was and there's another shout out to Damian Henry.
That guy's cool, too.
Yeah, the Anderson Silva lookalike. Mm-hmm. These are two junkies that have come to our junkie gatherings multiple times. Super cool guys. And I came across, well, first of all, another shout out to Big Ben Rothwell. He had a really nice statement regarding the shooting that's happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That's his hometown. And that, obviously, you've all seen on the news, has really, really spiraled in another direction. And he's hurt. He's really, really hurt. But he put out a nice statement. It's on the front page of Junkie if you want to check it out. And I was commending him for that. And I was sharing that story on my Facebook page, and I found a few Big Ben Rothwell pictures. One actually includes our dad, and then another one was with Damian Henry. And it's when Big Ben Rothwell came to the hotel room to party with us when we had our hotel suite party a couple junkie gatherings ago. Such a nice guy. He was doing shots with people. He was hanging out, laughing, telling jokes, being normal. Like, people were in awe of, oh, my God, you know, it's Big Ben Rothwell. He's hanging out with us. But he never once felt like, kiss my hand, I'm Big Ben Rothwell, I'm hanging out. I mean, he was just a cool dude hanging out.
Then he had to do the show in the morning, remember? Kind of came with a hangover.
Yeah.
So what you guys do to me?
So he's awesome, man. And guess what? I don't think I've shared this with you. Do you remember when we interviewed him about 2 months ago?
Yeah.
And I was able to find him doing that dance. What did we call it?
The Kenosha Shuffle or something like that?
Something like that, right? Remember, I found it on the internet, and it was to the same tune of Party Boy from Jackass.
Oh, yeah.
Doon, 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 doon. And it shows him doing it, right? And he kind of turns red, kind of like, I did it once.
But he told us after the show something about that, but we're not allowed to talk about it, right?
You're going to have to remind me what it is, because I already forgot.
How that all came about and why he doesn't do it ever again?
Yeah. Well, just remind me, because I don't remember.
Why? I can't say, because that's the part that he said.
Well, don't remind me later. Not after the show, yeah. But Ben's awesome, and that dance when he beat Alistair Overeem is hilarious. And people always ask him, do it again, you know, and he hasn't really done it. But guess what I found, a video of me taping him doing it.
At the party?
At the party.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm scouring the internet looking for that dance. When I had it on my laptop the whole time. And it was right next to those pictures of Damian Henry and our dad. And I think Big Ralph's also got a picture as well.
That was an
he
odd
just goes,
night.
Fuck you, George. And then all of a sudden he kind of laughs. He steps back and he starts doing the dance. I'll show it to you after the show. It's hilarious. I texted him and I go, hey, you in the mood to giggle a little bit? He goes, yeah. And I go, remember that one time I told you I was looking all over the internet for this damn thing? He goes, yeah. I go, I had it the whole time. Here it is. And he laughed. And I showed him those other pictures.
That,
he smiled and he said, thanks for putting me in a good mood.
That was an odd night because that was one of the first times that we actually mixed like family members into a junkie gathering situation. Mm-hmm. And so what made that so weird is like at the party, people would go, hey, Big Ben, you want a shot? And he'd go, nah, you know, I'm good. I'm not much of a drinker. But MMA fans, of course, out of respect, hey, no problem, Big Ben. Can I get you something else? But we had a cousin who had no idea who anybody is in MMA. She probably knows like Conor McGregor or whatever. And she wasn't taking no for an answer, remember? She
goes, Karen the Red Baron?
Yeah. She goes, you want a shot? And he goes, nah, I don't drink. She goes, fuck that big fella here. And she like shoved him in the chest, almost like Elaine Bennis, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he was like, whoa. And he had the shot. And she goes, do it. You know, and he goes, all right. And he took it. But you would never see that at anybody. But she didn't know. She just thought it was another dude.
Yeah.
And she's the one that got him drunk because she just kept giving him
shots. A bartender in Tampa Bay.
She was bullying him. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. That's awesome. I forgot about that part, but I believe it. That's why we call her Crazy Karen. All right. So, Damian Henry, if you're still a listener to the show, reach out to us because I wanted to tag you on Facebook and then I noticed he wasn't there anymore. So, you just never know, folks. The world takes a lot of turns and. I've always worried about Stuart from Scotland because I used to talk to him all the time. And now, luckily, I got him to answer me, I think, on Twitter, direct message. And then, so I know he's good. He's a sweet guy. And then Damian, that guy was awesome, too. He was always part of the team that left towards the end, him and Darius from Poland. There's a few of those guys that always kind of stuck till the end. He was one of them. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear from him. Hey, I'm all right, you know, whatever. Not just because of life in general, but because of this tough time we're in with COVID. So I reached out to Lewis Tough because I remember they went to I think it was a Cage Warriors together once.
Yeah, cool dog.
And I go, do you guys talk? And he goes, man, he goes, I think we communicated through Facebook. So he goes, I haven't seen him since then. He goes, I think he might have my mobile number, but I don't have his. So, but anyway, if he's still listening, then reach out to me, brother. And so, yeah, shout out to Lewis Tough. Shout out to Damian, Henry.
I want to give two, too.
Sure.
Benji from Belgium.
Oh, and, that guy's awesome,
Lucas
too.
From France. I miss those two guys.
Benji from Belgium. Wait. Yes, because he lives in Switzerland, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then who was the other one? Sorry.
Lucas from France.
Lucas, yes, yeah. I owe that guy an email. He writes really nice emails, a couple paragraphs, shares his thoughts. Cool dude.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this happens to you, but this happens a lot with him. He writes such nice emails, and he takes the time to write a good amount, you know, and share his thoughts, that I feel like I don't want to answer him like two or three lines because I feel like a dick. So as soon as it comes in, I don't want to be like if we're about to record Spinning Backlick, I don't want to go, hey, that's cool, thanks for writing me, because it takes a lot of time.
Right.
So I always tell myself, okay, when I'm done with this, then I'll take the time to actually write him something good.
Then the email gets buried and buried. Yeah. Then you find it 6 months later, like, oh, fuck, I never answered that guy. Mm-hmm. But you found it right when someone goes, okay, dinner's ready.
Yeah.
Stop looking at your
emails.
But
when I see it, it brings a smile to my face when I see his messages. So, like, if I don't get back to you, I apologize. That's completely on me. But I just did want that person to know that when I see his emails, that they make me smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Good list there. All right. We're gonna start talking about the news nuggets. They come up next. All right, so listen. There's not much out there in terms of news. We already kind of covered one, and that's Ricardo Lamas. He may retire. He's not sure if he will or not. Says he's going to decide with his family. We're going to try and reach out to him this week. Talk to him. See if he's what kind of thoughts he's put together. I mean, maybe almost losing to Bill Algeo might be some sort of a signal. You know, he is 38 years of age. He has another business. He's fought a lot of fights. So hopefully he's been able to make some good money. He's got a family with 3 kids. We don't know if he has, you know, any problems with TBI. We're obviously hoping that he doesn't, but I wonder if every fight, you know, these fighters, maybe you don't have to have an actual concussion to have that one moment where, like, boom, everything goes white, you know, for that 1 second, and then you regain. A lot of fighters can have moments like that, and Ricardo was really, really banged up, so he probably, you know, just wants to reassess and see. There's nothing wrong with going out on a win like that either. You know, is he close to a title shot? Probably not. He's in the really deep featherweight division. He once had one. He came up a little short against peak Jose Aldo. So, listen, it's a really fine career that he's had. He owns a UFC gym in Naperville, Illinois. And I believe he's got a college degree, so I think he would be prepared for whatever might be next for him, which apparently would probably be this gym at least. We know that.
I would tell him to chill as long as he wants, but he's just, I get really sad when I think about fighters calling it quits in front of no fans. Especially a guy like him, I just think he deserves to have his family in the arena, to have the fans clap for him, stand for him, because he really did give a lot to the sport. Mm-hmm. I think he deserves that. And maybe if that just means you got to wait a while, then wait. Because I think that moment's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Diego Sanchez isn't going to retire anytime soon, goes. He's going to retire, but he just signed a 4-fight contract, and he wants to fight all 4 fights. Now, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. If you go out there and don't look too hot, and get beat up pretty good, sometimes the UFC will go, listen, killer, it might be just time for you to exit. We don't know if we have another fight for you. I mean, cause they can cut you at any time. Just because you fight a four-fight contract doesn't mean they have to keep you for the whole four fights. But he's a big name. He's been doing this for a long time. Respect to him. He'll be in the Hall of Fame one day, especially because of his association, excuse me, with UFC, with The Ultimate Fighter 1. He was a Ultimate Fighter champion, and he was a title contender. He fought BJ Penn once, came up short, but I could see him probably wind up in the Hall of Fame. So four fight contract, look out for him. We talked to Dan Hardy today, and I said, hey, when you hear Condit's got another fight, when you see that Matt Brown recently fought Diego Sanchez, I mean, that's your crew, you know. Do you get the juices flowing? And he says he does, but I didn't want to go down that road and having him explain, you know, that he hasn't had time to look at his heart or something. Because mm-hmm. I feel like I've heard, I think I even told him once, I'm like, I may have even said, fool, it's been 3 years. How busy can you be? Get to the doctor, you know. But then I thought. But
he countered with, I've been busy.
I know. It's funny. But I just didn't want to, like, we already did that bit, so that's fine. I think I've seen some other interviews where he's teased that maybe he's thought about it, he's doing it. So I just wanted to just ask him, hey, do the juices flow when you see some of your comrades out there doing it, you know? And if so, that's all we need to know, because it tells us that he may or may not fight. That's just something I think that he wants to keep to himself. Either that or it's the biggest, longest eight-year secret I've mm-hmm. ever seen in MMA.
But he definitely stays in shape if you follow him. Mm-hmm. He's always in the gym, always working on new stuff, so we'll have to see. By the way, did you see Llamas in the plane?
Eating? No.
That was funny. He basically figured out a way where, I don't know what he had, like Skittles or something, but he would pull the mask far. You know, like if you were to make it snap on your face, he'd pull it, pop in a Skittle, let it go, it would come back onto his face, and he'd do it again.
Really?
Pop in a Skittle.
That was funny. I gotta check it out. One other thing. Check out the Dan Hardy interview. I think you guys will like it. We talked a little bit about Lee Murray and Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre. We just covered a lot. It was really enjoyable to talk to him. But again, the editorial team is going to find a couple angles, recap them, throw some video highlights centered around the 90 seconds to 2 minutes of what we talked about, and then that's it. Folks, we talked to him for like 40 minutes, and I thought it was a pleasant conversation the whole time. He told a story once of, I think it was his last fight. He won. He didn't even want to be at the after party, so he walked across the street and went home and started building Legos. He loves to do Lego projects. So, like I said, we just covered a lot with a good guy. All the interviews that we do are available on youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Look out for that one soon. All right, next up here in the news nuggets is, I already mentioned that Neil Magny wants Jeff Neal. And by the way, Jeff Neal's already answered. He wants Neil Magny. So matchmakers, they kind of did the job for you. Jessica Andrade is moving up to 125. She fights Caitlin Chookagian. That's a solid matchup, right, Guz?
I like it. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think she feels like, well, I lost this fight to Rose. Now I'm really not near a title shot anytime soon. So why don't I explore this in the meantime? Zhang Weili is probably going to fight either Joanna, if Joanna's not retired, or probably Rose, since Rose just beat Jessica Andrade, in which case Joanna might either try and get the winner, probably hoping it's not Rose because she's 0-2 against her. Maybe take another fight. And then, of course, either Tatiana Suarez is going to come back finally healthy and just reclaim her spot. Or I guess maybe some of the other young ladies that are in the mix will work their way up. It's like that, though, that foursome, along with Tatiana, have kind of owned that division a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not really sure with Joanna. If you follow her on social media, I just don't know that. I mean, she honestly does kind of look retired. You know, she'll still get her sweat in, but she looks like she's out there having fun, and I think she deserves it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's going like to award shows or mm-hmm. like in evening attire a lot. you don't see a lot of the gals put on the high heels. I think a lot of them are just athletic girls, and if they don't have to wear the heels, they won't. But I've seen Joanna all dressed up doing the town. Like, literally the last 20 posts, half of them are that. So, I mean, if she's enjoying herself, good on her. And again, Ben Rothwell, check out that article, folks. It's called Ben Rothwell Pleads for Compassion Amid Unrest Following Kenosha Shootings. It's another thing I wanted to mention. Again, it's in the news nuggets here that I had. Actor Chadwick Boseman has passed away. He was in Black Panther, and a lot of MMA stars paid tribute to him. It's an untimely death. However, he was battling colon cancer for 4 years, only 43 years of age. And he also portrayed Jackie Robinson and I believe James Brown in other films. A lot of respect there. And a lot of fighters did some really, really nice tributes online, including Francis Ngannou. Goes, I never saw the movie, believe it or not. Black Panther? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I thought he did great. He did a great Black Panther.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out. You can tell he meant a lot to a lot of people. Aljamain Sterling was another guy that shared some nice thoughts. Mentioned that was his hero, Michelle Waterson, as well. We have that article up with the tributes there if you want to check it out. Angela Hill, a lot of people kind of dressing up as well on their social media as they paid tribute. And then lastly, Ricky Simone. He was out with COVID, and so Brian Kelleher was needing a new opponent. So he's one of the latest fighters to be out. Ion Cutelaba on fight day found out he had COVID. This is the second time, like in 3 weeks. I'm just thinking it's probably the same. I think he's just in the same run, you know. I think there's only worldwide, there's only been a few cases of, oh, I had it here, and then months later I got it again. I think one of them might actually been in Nevada, in Reno, up north. And so I don't know that there's too much science on that just yet, but that was a headline that I saw somewhere. But as far as Ricky Simone, he was out because of a cornerman. Sorry, I needed to specify that. Ion Cutelaba was himself testing positive. So that fight with Ankalaev, I just don't even know if they're going to pursue it again or what.
I don't think so.
Right? I don't know. Because remember, the last one was only 3 weeks ago. So Ankalaev probably was like, all right, I'll just stay in Vegas. Give me the same guy. Like, do they write them at least a check for 10 grand, you know, for all the expenses?
Didn't one time Dana say, like, they do get something. It's just not their show up, right?
Something, nothing, hell, I don't know. Something like that, yeah. That's a quote from Tombstone. Yeah, so that's our news nuggets. Let's preview this weekend. All right, this isn't a full-on preview because that's kind of what we do on Thursday. So more specifically, I just want to remind people that the train doesn't stop. The UFC is going to keep going, and we're going to have a lot of coverage this week. It's UFC on ESPN Plus 33 with Alistair Overeem versus Augusto Sakai. However, the Ovin St. Preux Alonzo Menifield matchup that was supposed to happen a couple weekends ago but didn't because OSP had a positive test and a negative and a positive and a negative, that's been reshuffled. And I guess that's what I meant about Ankalaev and Jan Cutelaba. They've already done it once. Could they do it again? I don't know, but that's kind of what's happening here. And then Kelleher goes, he was supposed to fight Ricky Simone. I believe he's gotten a new matchup. I just don't know if it's official, but this also affects that card as well. So it's like these announcements just kind of bleed over from one event to the next, but they're all at these different I think it's two different hotels, and they shift back and forth, or they rotate them or something like that. I think there's a difference between Dana White Contender Series and these proper shows. But yeah, I mean, you know what sucks is the Reams fighting, and he's fighting literally 10 minutes away. I wouldn't mind catching the Reem fight.
You've never seen him fight live?
I have.
Oh.
Against Bigfoot Silva. He lost that one. I'm sure I have a few times, but I don't know. One of the UFC officials said, how come you haven't been coming down? Take the test. And see, I was under the impression you got to also stay in a hotel for 48 hours.
I thought you do.
Yeah, so I don't know if Junkie's going to do that for multiple. Well, John's on furlough this week. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if that means I'm on interview Kenny's duty in the back, right? Or what. I was thinking more of like Tuesday night contenders watching the damn fights. But if I'm interviewing in the back, then not that I mind doing that. If I'm asked to, I will. But it's definitely different from the idea of going there and watching the fights. Because, folks, the Apex is beautiful. You cannot argue with the Apex. The Apex is money. It's really, really a great spot. It's even better with fans, and it's perfect for some situations. I don't know how it would be for a fight night, personally, but for a Tuesday Night Contender Series, it's perfect. It's the best I can describe it. Also in action is Thiago Moises, Michelle Pereira, Cejara Eubanks, Montana De La Rosa. So it's a decent card. I would say last week's looked better on paper than this one, right?
Yeah,
I just kind of threw out all the names.
It's tough, though. Like, you'll never get me to not get excited when Nareem fights, especially when that intro comes out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, folks, that's our Sunday edition. Or it's really our Monday show, but it's a late-night Sunday edition that'll be available on the different podcast platforms. We ship it to Omni and then grabbing the RSS feed, going to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the rest is why you get it a little bit early. It'll also drop on our website, MMAJunkie.com, like it does every Monday and Thursday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It follows Hablemos MMA. That drops at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. And don't forget, we also have a video version of this show. It's Junkie Radio on Sportscaster on Wednesdays. We just got another commitment of shows that almost takes us through the end of the year. So we're going to keep doing our thing on Wednesdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Our guest last week was Laura Sanko. Our guest this week is Megan Olivi. You got to tune in, folks. That's a fun show. It's an hour long. You can jump in our chat room with us. And we always have a guest. At least most of the time we have a guest. So won't you join us there? All right, we're going to get on out of here. With that, be champions.